Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, second hour of our show. Great to have you with us from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great to see the Sunbury Motors crew out yesterday at the Greater Susquehanna Valley Country Club because they wanted to give back to the community and help out the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. They were part of the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, which was a huge success, a record success yesterday. Thrilled about that and the way it played out. Kevin and I were thrilled to be a part of it. Two of us had a great time playing a round of golf together yesterday. Best he's ever played. Kev played really, really well yesterday. And we're going to continue on looking at the National Football League draft. We're going to keep it on the eastern side of the state. Shield Capetia covers the Philadelphia Eagles on a daily basis. And Shield, my friend, how you been? It's been a while.
Doing great, Steve. How you doing?
Doing well. All right. Draft is coming up. All right. So what do the Philadelphia Eagles now do?
I think when you look at it at number 22 from kind of a philosophical perspective with this organization, you have the smart offensive coach in Chip Kelly. The offense was really good last year in his first season. So in my opinion, it makes sense to invest some more resources into that defense. It was a competitive group last year. I think some of that was a little bit of smoke and mirrors. They came up with some key turnovers, got some red zone stops. Those things are important. But I think you still need an upgrade on that side of the football. So I think if you're staying at 22, you got to identify some really standout defensive players and see if you can go that route if possible.
I don't think any coach went to more pro days than Chip. I think that's documented, that he went to more pro days than anyone. When he went to Texas A&M, he took a long look at Mike Evans. When he came here to Penn State, he took a long look at Allen Robinson. Where does the wide receiver fall for them? Is it a round two, round three thing, or do you think round one?
I think it could fall either way. You know, they want to stick with the best player available, kind of a mantra they've been preaching time and time and again this offseason. So I think this is obviously a draft that's loaded at wide receiver. So if you sit there at number 22, if you don't see a defensive player you love, and maybe someone like Marquise Lee from USC, Odell Beckham, I don't think he's going to be there, but if he slips, or someone like Brandon Cooks from Oregon State, I think those are some names to keep an eye on in the first round. And then you mentioned it in the second round. I think Allen Robinson is absolutely a name to watch, and there are some other wide receivers who you could get in that second round and even later. You know, Howie Roseman, the GM, he said he thinks you're going to be able to get starting caliber talent in the fourth round at the wide receiver position. So to me, it makes sense to wait if you can, address the defensive side of the ball, then maybe pick up a wide receiver or two in the later rounds. But again, if you just have that wide receiver rated better than any of the defensive guys at number 22, you certainly could go that way in the first round.
When you look at the game today, 22 chess pieces on the field, you need each one to perform really well. Certain ones, though, do come into play. Quarterback, left tackle, rush end, shutdown corner, and probably, you know, just in terms of being the brains of the operation out there, a middle linebacker, especially if you're going to play Tampa 2 or whatever. How do you think the Eagles are set up at the five positions I just talked about? Quarterback, left tackle, shutdown corner, rush end, and MLB.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think quarterback, you obviously have Nick Foles coming off the great season. So I don't think they're going to make a move for a quarterback
right
in this draft. I think certainly he'll be the guy going into next year, and then you decide what you do long term. A left tackle, they signed Jason Peters, one of the better left tackles in the NFL. Yep. They gave him an extension even though he's over 30, so they obviously expect him to be the guy. The pass rush is really the most interesting part on defense. They moved to that 3-4 last year. They've got Trent Cole, who's put in a lot of good years, but is going to be 32 years old. And they've got Connor Barwin at left outside linebacker. He's more of a jack-of-all-trades kind of guy. He can cover a little bit. He can play the run. He can rush the passer. But he's not that fierce pass rusher. So In the first round, you look at that with the Eagles, a guy like Anthony Barr of UCLA. If he starts to slip, I think he's a guy they could potentially be interested in. Other two positions you mentioned, I know you said shutdown cornerback. It's really interesting. I get the sense with the Eagles with this scheme that they might not be looking or willing to invest significant resources into a shutdown corner. They play a lot of cover three. They want those guys to be good tacklers, play assignment football, but they don't put them out there on an island as much as maybe some other teams who run more man coverage schemes. So that's another position to certainly keep an eye on, though. And then inside linebacker, they've got D'Amico Ryans and Michael Kendricks. Kendricks, obviously a young ascending player, but D'Amico Ryans, he's nearing 30 years old, isn't great in pass coverage, isn't a great pass rusher. So in the first round, if someone like C.J. Mosley of Alabama, mm-hmm. he starts to slip, maybe you get younger at that position, he comes in, plays in your stuff packages right away, and eventually replaces D'Amico Ryans. So those are all some good positions to look at for the Eagles.
I've been a big Mosley guy since the first two times I saw him. I saw him in person twice. I've been big in terms of what I think he can do at the next level. You know, he can play the pass as well as the run. He's really, really good, in fact, playing the pass.
That's really the big thing because, you know, they need a guy who can be out there for three downs, and I totally agree with you. He's someone who can direct the defense, stay on the field for all three downs, cover, play the run, and do all those things. I have seen some questions about his medical a little bit here in the past couple weeks, so that's certainly something teams will have to check out. And who knows, maybe that's something that works in the Eagles' favor a little bit if he starts to slip, but they give him a clean bill of health. Maybe he does drop down to 22 unexpectedly.
The Eagles have fewer draft picks than most other teams. Give me an idea of the impact on their flexibility or the lack thereof as to what they can and can't do with this draft.
Yeah, that drives Howie Roseman nuts. He says he can't stand having a round where he doesn't have a pick. He said last year, I think it was the sixth round, he actually left the building and took a walk around the practice field because he didn't trust himself to not do something dumb and try to get a pick in that round. So you're absolutely right. You know, they only have six picks. They traded a fifth rounder to acquire Darren Sproles earlier this offseason. So I think it limits you a little bit, but I still think you can be aggressive. You know, if you want to make a move up in the first round, as some people have rumored, you're probably going to have to give up that third-round pick. I'll tell you what I think is more likely is that they would trade out of the first round or certainly trade to a lower pick in the first round and pick up some additional picks. I think there are still a lot of depth questions on this football team that need to be addressed, and I would say picking up more picks is probably the more likely scenario.
It's also been, you mentioned Darren Sproles in that, it's been an important transition in one area. DeSean Jackson, for whatever you might think about him, is a dynamic playmaker. And because of that, commands attention, and I think makes other people around him better because of the attention he commands. Does that impact how the Eagles think about what they're doing at that spot because of what he did?
Yeah, I don't see how it doesn't. You know, I know they'll tell you that's not the case, but when you lose a guy who was that vertical threat, who drew that safety help on really in every snap basis, it's got to affect you a little bit. So I don't know that they're going to go out and target a guy who's exactly like DeSean Jackson. I don't know that that guy exists anyway, but certainly when you look at the offensive side of the ball, you want to add some speed, and you need to be able to get some guys who can get down the field. For all the talk about Chip Kelly and being a run-first spread offense, that is true. But also, this offense led the NFL in pass plays of 20-plus yards, and you're talking about more than Peyton Manning, more than Aaron Rodgers, more than a lot of good quarterbacks in this league. So I think that's certainly not something you want to lose when you go into year two.
Which then brings us to Darren Sproles. I thought that was one of the better moves made, that trade to acquire him. The domino, what can it mean for LeSean McCoy? But what can it mean for Nick Foles to have someone as a third down back that a Drew Brees I know loved?
Yeah, I think it's the second part more, to be honest with you, Steve. I think he's going to be much more of a receiver than a running back in this offense. I think he had something like 53 carries last year with New Orleans, and LeSean McCoy is a guy who does not like to come off the field, and really, he didn't wear down last year. He was very good towards the end of the season, He was very good in the fourth quarter, so I don't think it's going to impact him greatly. I think he's still going to be among the league leaders in carries, yards, all those different things. For Foles, it should help. You know, they want to move Foles around a lot, line him up in the backfield, line him up in the slot, get him matched up against linebackers and safeties. That's really the name of the game with Darren Sproles. Get him the ball in space, let him make some people miss. So I do think he's going to be effective in the passing game. And certainly when you give up a fifth-round pick for a 31-year-old running back, you better have plans for him to get on the field quite a bit, because he's not someone who's going to help you 3 years down the road. It's really here the next two seasons, maybe three seasons if you're lucky.
And he'd also be the one expected to be the punt return guy in place of Jackson. Jackson's dynamic. You feel like he can take it to the house every time. Sproles is the kind of guy that's going to get you 9 to 12 yards every time and be dependables. But he's still going to be the guy that's expected to fill that role too, correct?
Yeah, I think you will be. You know, that was an area they were not great in last year. I think you could certainly see them address that in the draft. Also, we mentioned Odell Beckham earlier, Marquise Lee. Those are some guys who do have some return ability also. But, I would expect Sproles to be in the mix. And as of right now, he's probably the favorite to fill those roles.
All right. So on the wish list for the Eagles, give me your personal checklist as to needs. And, you know, it doesn't have to matter the order, but what's your checklist?
I'd say wide receiver, absolutely. You've got Riley Cooper coming back. Jeremy Macklin's only on a one-year deal, and you don't have much depth at all behind that. So I think you got to get at least one wide receiver. I would say safety is always an issue for this football team. It seems they signed Malcolm Jenkins, but I think you still need to add another body there. And then I think you could certainly look to upgrade at cornerback and pass rush on the defensive side of the ball. So you'll notice a lot of my positions are on defense. I think that's where you really need to address the depth and address the talent level.
How important a year is it for Nick Foles coming up after what he put together last year? You know that defensive coordinators have spent time, a significant amount of time, as to how to handle it. Give me an idea of the importance of this upcoming year for Nick Foles so that he shows that he is the 10-year answer.
Yeah, it's huge for a number of reasons. Number one is, just like you said, a lot of smart defensive coordinators in this league will now have more film on Nick Foles and be able to identify his strengths and weaknesses. That's something all young quarterbacks go through. He knows that, and he's going to have to react and probably go through some more adversity and show he can bounce back this season. And he's got to do it without one of the best vertical threats in the NFL in DeSean Jackson. So that's going to be a challenge. Also last year, the offensive line stayed healthy for all 16 games, all five members. Is that going to happen again this year? So there could be some obstacles Foles has to overcome here in his second season as the full-time starter. And the other reason it's really a crucial year is because of the CBA, after next season, Nick Foles can renegotiate that contract. So if he comes anywhere close to putting up the numbers he put up last year, all of a sudden his agent's absolutely going to be calling the Eagles and looking to get that extension, looking to get him paid. On the flip side, if he takes a step back or doesn't look like nearly the same player he was last year, all of a sudden the Eagles are going to go into next offseason with some serious decisions to make at the quarterback position.
Always enjoy your insight very much. Thanks a lot for your time.
All right, take care, Steve. Thanks a lot.
That's Shiel Capetti, who covers the Philadelphia Eagles on a daily basis. Talk about the needs that they have. Of course, the Steelers, the Steelers' needs have been well documented. We've talked about that repeatedly, that they need a corner. They need a defensive tackle. Somewhere they need another wide receiver. When Mike Tomlin came here to Penn State to watch Penn State's combine on April 8th, he was here to take a long look at Allen Robinson and take a long look at Daquan Jones. I know he also looked at Glenn Carson, but Carson is somebody who, by the way, has improved his draft stock, but Carson is still no better than the 6th or 7th round pick, which, of course, would be tremendous for Glenn if that were to happen. But Glenn Carson at the combine here at Penn State really helped himself. Now, whether he helped himself enough to go from free agent that's going to be signed quickly to actually being drafted, we'll find out. But when Mike Tomlin was here, he was taking a long look at Daquan Jones and was taking a long look at Allen Robinson. Chip Kelly, when he was here, took a long look at Allen Robinson. So, I mean, that's what you have, you know, in terms of what their observations were when they came here to Penn State for the NFL draft. The Giants and the Jets, the Redskins, the Ravens, they all have fans in our area as well. What are some of the needs there? The Jets have needs across the board. I think you have to build up what Geno Smith has around him. Somewhere along the line, you have to. And then you look at the New York Giants. The Giants needs, really, they need more offensive linemen, although they went offensive line last year with the Pugh kid out of Syracuse. They need more linemen. But I could see the Giants getting another stretch receiver with Akeem Nicks now out of the mix. You can see them getting another guy to help out Eli Manning in the vertical passing game. Redskins are interesting. I think the Redskins are a team that they've gone from division champion one year to the bottom of the division the next year. A lot of that, of course, to me, is because of what happened to RG3. And I've given RG3 largely a pass. Far more of a pass, I think, than anybody else for this particular reason. I think it was very hard for him to perform last year, 8.5 months removed from a torn ACL. And I've seen this repeatedly in the course of my career. When you tear a knee ligament, and there's multiple, it's when you have multiple damage. I don't want to hear about Adrian Peterson. I don't want to hear about Michael Motti. I really don't, because they were separate where they only tore the ACL. When you have multiple damage, that includes the MCL and sometimes even the PCL, it takes longer. Usually that first year back, you are functional. The second year you're back, you're really back. Speed, cutting ability, confidence. That's why I think 2014 is a critical year, the single most important year of RG3's career. If he comes back and plays near the level that he played his rookie year, because he can now run more, cut better, have confidence in it. Last year was an unfair year for him, where I have to give him credit for gutting it out and doing the best that he could, considering there's no way on the planet he was 100%. You just can't be. Now, people have said to me, well, yeah, look at what Michael Motti did. Michael Motti tore his ACL. That's why his surgery was 9 days after he tore it. That's because the swelling went down right away and it was one ligament. Most of these injuries have multiple, where it's an MCL, PCL in combination, whatever. And usually it's 3 weeks after. It's the length of time after the surgery it's the length of time between the injury and the surgery that will tell you, the fan, how quickly that guy can come back. If it's 7 days to 10 days afterward, that means the swelling went down right away, and it's a one ligament surgery, and the idea of getting back 8.5 months later, you can do. But if it's a 3 week deal where suddenly 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks after, that means there's multiple damage in there. That's what he had, multiple damage. Because of that, it takes longer. That's why this is a critical year. They picked up DeSean Jackson. That the domino effect of that is going to be great. I see the Redskins also shoring up their defense in this draft. Shore up the defense in this draft. Roll the dice that Griffin's going to be back. You gave him Jackson. You got Santana Moss. You got an offensive-minded head coach now. All right. Charlie Campbell, WalterFootball.com. Final half hour of the show coming up. We head to the bottom of the hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
In May, Sunbury Motors Kia's launch to savings is as easy as
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wanna see you in Kia, Sunbury Motors. $1,000 off the International Car of the Year, the 2014 Luxury Cadenza. Up to $4,000 off 2015 Serenos, starting at $22,913. And there's 23 to choose from. Sunbury Motors Kia has up to $3,000 off 2014 all-wheel drive Sportages, starting at $22,497. Up to $2,000 off the iconic 5-star safety-rated Kia Soul. Sunbury Motors Kia has 20 of them. We are the number one selling Kia dealer in a 50-mile radius because we put our customers first. Combined with 70 new Kias to choose from and a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, why go anywhere else but Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip in Hummel's Wharf at sunburymotors.com.
Tax and tags extra. All applicable Kia customer rebates apply. KMF bonus cash and financing well qualified customers.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, final half hour of the show. One of the more entertaining nights of my life coming up, where Kevin repeatedly floods me with text messages as to what the Steelers are going to do based on what's happening in front. It's one of those great panic nights where Kevin panics. Now, I know you can't, none of you can picture that Kevin would panic. No. I can't believe they took this guy. What are they going to do now? I just sit there and, okay, yeah, what? It's all good. And he hates that attitude. It's all good. Kevin and I, by the way, had a great time yesterday. Susquehanna Valley Country Club. It was great seeing everyone out there. Everyone. So many people we said hi to along the way that stopped by. The Purdy's stopped by during the course of the show yesterday. That was great. The Sunbury Motors Group stopped by, which is great to see Tom and everybody. What a great job they do, and I'm back here in the Sunbury Motors studio today. Just want to remind everyone, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Yes, I did stop at Brewer's Outlet yesterday. Made sure I made that stop. But Judy Carr from Nottingham Village, great to see her yesterday. She stopped by. That was great. I mean, Bonnie Wasmer stopped by yesterday from the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. That was terrific. And now we transition out of that incredible event that had 180 participants, a record number yesterday, benefiting the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. What great work they do. And we have the NFL draft coming up tonight. Looking forward to that. That means we bring in Charlie Campbell, WalterFootball.com. CeCe, great to see you, man.
Great to be back. Good to talk to you, Steve.
Well, let's get to it, because I was asked a question before you came on. You know, the best quarterback is there an impact quarterback in this draft? My answer actually was Zach Mettenberger for the long term. Maybe I'm way off. How do you look at the quarterbacks? Because obviously in any draft, that will be the most intriguing part. This one has a lot of intrigue to it.
Yeah, I completely agree that, there's a lot of intrigue with the quarterbacks here because the order in which they could come off the board is very random and varies by a huge amount between the different teams. I was speaking with a GM from a playoff team over the weekend, and he was telling me that Derek Carr is the best pure passer in the draft. I know three teams in the top 10 rank Carr as their second-rated quarterback, and those teams feel that Blake Bortles from Central Florida has the most upside because of his size and mobility skill set, but Carr is the most natural passer in the draft, so those two guys could go high, and then, of course, Johnny Manziel's a nut ball in there. He could sneak into the top 10, go in the top 20, and then Teddy Bridgewater from Louisville has been sliding, and I've spoken with teams, and a number of teams feel he could make it to round two. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out on draft night.
Bortles played against Penn State, so we saw him in person. Really like how he throws the short ball, like how he moves in the pocket, really like how he throws the medium ball, don't like how he throws the deep ball. What's your evaluation of him?
Yeah, I agree. I think he needs to get better with his ball placement and with their offense there. He didn't throw every route that he's going to have to throw in the NFL. He's going to need some development in terms of improving his field vision, you know, working through his progressions and whatnot. And, of course, like you said, he's got to improve on his ability to throw the deep ball. I think there is some real risk with taking him high in the draft. I mean, he had some rough games last year against teams like SMU and some other mid-level schools that you think a top 10 quarterback should dominate. So he's not a typical top 10 quarterback in recent years where they come in and start right away. He's going to need more developmental time and some pro coaching before he's ready to become a starter. And you don't want to force him in there too early and ruin him and set him back further.
But I'd say in September, a lot of mock drafts had Teddy Bridgewater being the first overall pick in the draft.
Yep.
What is
that's right.
What has derailed him, Charlie?
Well, you know, it's a variety of things, and I've spoken with teams about it, and they're all just kind of lukewarm on him. They have concerns about his frame and his size as far as taking the hits in the NFL that are coming his way. He's 6'2", a little bit over 200 pounds, but teams are worried about him being a little thin and how's he going to handle getting hit a lot in the NFL. And then his passing ability, sometimes his accuracy, teams feel can go run in streaks where he's accurate, very accurate, and then as times where he isn't. So I think the level of competition didn't really help him in college either. But it just sounds like teams feel that from a passing ability, he's great in the film room, works hard, smart kid, but just needs some work as a passer and needs some work developing his body. And they're not sure that his body type really is going to yield him to getting much bigger in the NFL.
Charlie, I know Johnny Manziel's the intriguing guy in this. I had made the observation that there are times where I've watched him in games where he acts like he throws the ball like a guy, like even he doesn't think he has a strong arm the way he throws it sometimes. I also think he misses. I also think he doesn't see the field well. What do you say about Johnny Manziel, who is without question the most intriguing creative guy in this thing?
Yeah, I completely agree. There are times where he doesn't see things around the field, and he doesn't trust the pocket. You know, he'll drop back, and at Texas A&M, he had an all-star offensive line with two tackles who are high first-round talents, and Luke Jokel and Jake Matthews. Cedric Ogabe is another one who's going to get drafted high who's still there. He had a great line, and there were times where it just, you know, he would get antsy in the pocket and run around when he didn't need to, and he didn't see things downfield, and that could be a result of him being, you know, 5'11", and not having the field vision that bigger quarterbacks have, and his tendency to run. He's not patient enough back there to let his receivers work themselves open. So I think he definitely has to improve, because he had so many plays where he would scramble around and just throw a jump ball up for grabs, and Mike Evans would go rebound it, you know, over all these other defensive backs for a big play. And, you know, in the NFL, you can't make a living off that, because the cornerbacks and safeties are bigger and faster and can jump higher than college DBs. So you have to get into more precision pocket passing, and that's going to be the big challenge with him. And offensively, he wasn't in a pro-style attack that really developed him for that. So he's going to need time as well. But he has a specialness to him, some playmaking ability that, you know, everything breaks down and he figures out a way to make a play, and some great instincts at times where he seems to be a step ahead of the defense. So, I mean, he's a high-risk player and definitely one that will be interesting to watch. But he's going to need time to develop in the NFL. I don't think he should start right away.
Charlie, let's get to something that I've always find interesting. Everyone tries to hit the grand slam in this thing, but then there are certain guys that are just good, solid football players that can just play, and if you draft them, they're going to come in and just be really good for you. Luke Kuechly is a perfect example of that.
Yep.
Give me a couple, three guys that you think are the nice, safe, solid NFL pick. They're going to come in, play, won't be a superstar, but they'll be really, really good.
Well, you know, I think you can look at the offensive line for that. I think Jake Matthews from Texas A&M, like Luke Kuechly, he could kind of go in the end of the top 10 or early in the teens, and he isn't necessarily the most sexy pick out there. And, you know, athletically, he isn't as the specimen that Greg Robinson is of Auburn, but Matthews is technically sound, just does everything well as a technician, can run block, pass block, and he's going to play in the NFL a long time. I think he would definitely be one of those safe pick guys that's going to be a good player quickly and will be an asset to his team. I think if you look at the wide receiver position, you're going to find guys like that for the first three or four rounds. In the first round, outside of, you know, the stars and Sammy Watkins, I think Odell Beckham from LSU is going to be a really good pro. I think he's going to stretch the field and make plays for teams downfield. I think on day two, you have a guy there in Allen Robinson who's going to be a great receiver in terms of doing the dirty work for an offense, moving the chains on third down, and being a yards after the catch. He's going to be a steal for someone. So I think there's a lot of good football players in this draft that aren't getting the attention that some of the top guys are or the quarterbacks, but they're going to be really good values for teams on day two and into day three.
You will find no bigger fans of Allen Robinson and Jared Aberderis than Jack Hamm and myself. Because, I mean, because obviously Robinson we saw on an everyday basis.
Sure.
But Aberderis, walk-on, 4-4 guy, returns punts, and just plays. I mean, on a team that didn't have a lot of receivers, I mean, and you knew you had to stop him, he still made plays. I mean, those two guys, to me, and Robinson helped himself. How much did Robinson's pro day help him, especially when he clocked the time in the 4-4s?
I think it really solidified him, you know, in the top, in day two for sure, but
right.
I think in the second round. I just don't see him falling out of round two with all he brings to an offense. And I think that pro day time really helped him. I think the combine time, I didn't put a whole lot of stock into it because when you watch him, he plays fast. He plays faster than
yes,
he would time, and I was kind of expecting that. Especially with his yards after the catch ability. You see him running away from defenders. So I wasn't really worried about his speed, and I think the pro day just kind of helps to alleviate those who have that concern.
With Charlie Campbell, WalterFootball.com, and the NFL Draft. Charlie, two other guys, the Sullivan Award winner John Urschel, and then Penn State defensive tackle Daquan Jones. Let's start with Daquan Jones. I think he drew some interest from both Chip Kelly and Mike Tomlin when they came in here last week.
Yeah, you know, and he's really an interesting player because of his versatility. I mean, if you look at since the end of the season, he's gained some weight. It looks like, you know, from he was probably playing about 315, and now he's in the 320s.
Yeah.
So he could fit a 3-4 defense like those teams run, the Steelers and the Eagles. He could be an end or a nose tackle, so he's versatile there. And in a 4-3 defense, he's an excellent nose tackle and also can move to the 3 technique. He has some underrated quickness and ability to put some pressure on the quarterback, and I think he's going to be an excellent value pick for someone on day two. So Jones definitely would be higher in a different draft year that wasn't maybe so deep at tackle. There are some good second-day guys, and he's among that crew, and I think he could be a good fit in a 4-3 or 3-4 defense.
What about a John Urschel? I've actually heard some people mention John Urschel possibly as a center.
Yeah, and I think that would make sense. You know, I think having him, just kind of cross-training him in the NFL across the offensive line would be a way to do it, because that's really going to, you know, give him the flexibility on game day to help a team in a variety of spots. And I think the coaching he received there from Bill O'Brien and that staff, they like versatile offensive linemen. That's what they're looking for now in Houston, you know, having a guys that they can move around from tackle and guard to center are really valuable these days. And I think he would fit into that mold, and I think he might require a little prep time with that, but he's going to be a valuable player for someone in that role.
What is your take on Jadeveon Clowney?
You know, I think that the talk about the work ethic and you know, motivational issues has gotten a little bit blown out of proportion. And speaking with scouts, they told me about it last summer that, you know, he wasn't the hardest worker in the weight room or on the practice field, but he was a good teammate, was a good guy, you know, was engaging to his teammates, was not putting himself above them in any way. And when the lights came on, he wanted to make big plays for his team and help his team win. And obviously, athletically, he's a freak and just such a rare prospect. I think Houston would be making a big mistake in passing on him with the first pick. I think he's going to is a safe bet to turn into a double-digit sacker. And if he reaches his full potential, he could go down in NFL history as one of the greats. So I think with his elite skill set, they would be foolish to pass on him for any of these quarterbacks.
Right, and obviously putting him opposite J.J. Watt now gives Houston something that, you know, who do you double?
That's the answer to Andrew Luck,
yeah,
you know, and
exactly.
They're going to have him for the next decade, and J.J. Watt won't be able to do it alone when he's getting double and triple teamed. So
yeah.
I think they need another guy on the other side from Watt or next to Watt to make it hard to double team both of them.
Is Khalil Mack of Buffalo a safe pick, or because he played at Buffalo, is it a mystery pick?
Well, you know, I think that the performance against Ohio State really helped him with that question.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
If he didn't play well against the Buckeyes, I think that would really be a big knock and a question teams would have against him. But because he dominated Ohio State with those sacks and turnovers and had another big play taken away by a penalty, I think that really served to answer the question about the level of competition. And I think that, you know, in some ways, you know, draft process can overinflate guys, and he's maybe received some of that, but from speaking with scouts, he really is a hardworking guy. I know some former teammates of his, and they say he's a great worker and a really special athlete, so I think he will pan out. I don't think he's going to be a bust in the Aaron Curry mold of a few years ago.
And one more name I'll throw at you, a guy I liked a lot watching him in college, was Anthony Barr of UCLA.
Yeah, I love him. And I think that, you know, he's one of the victims of overanalysis in the months from the end of the season to the draft. You know, every year you see these great players who get picked apart and, you know, looking for flaws that may not be there or making a big deal out of minor things, and I think that's the case with Anthony Barr. I mean, you watch the last 2 years in the Pac-12, and he was the most consistent pass rusher, made a ton of big plays for UCLA, helped them in so many games from comeback possibilities, like the Nebraska game with 3 forced fumbles.
Yep.
I just think he's going to turn into a really good pro once he gets some more time at outside linebacker. I mean, 2 years ago, he was an obscure fullback who had 12 receptions in his first couple years in college. So the ceiling with him is immense, especially once he gets NFL coaching. And I think he's going to be a really good pass rusher and good player for someone and could be a great fit in a 3-4 defense.
Charlie, an absolute pleasure. Can't wait to catch up with you again.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Great to talk to you as always.
That is Charlie Campbell, WalterFootball.com. He's been our go-to draft guy. I know we've talked draft now for the last 2 hours, going with Shiel Kapadia, who covers the Eagles on an everyday basis, talking to Thomas Frank Carr, who's been doing mock drafts now since January 1. But Charlie Campbell's been my go-to guy as to what I like to talk about the draft overview. That's because he puts a lot into it, and we're going to get Charlie back on to analyze the draft post-mortem next week, which we're looking forward to very much. So it's all set up. The NFL has round one tonight. This used to be a deal where
during the week that start in the morning and they draft. I remember being in the sports information office when it was in Rec Hall. And yet, some of you may have seen the Sports Illustrated story about the Sean Farrell draft in 1983. No, I'll check that. 1982, in the spring of 82, with the Tampa Bay Bucks. We were sitting with Sean Farrell when all of that happened. All of a sudden, he left the room, was going to be drafted by the then St. Louis Cardinals. He said, I will never sign with you. And the Cardinals passed. Then eventually he was picked by Tampa Bay. And, of course, they say it was supposed to be Reese that was picked and not Farrell. Well, that's the way it used to be. Then ESPN said, hey, we'd like to televise this. And everybody looked around and said, really? Now look at it. Round one tonight, two and three tomorrow, and rounds four through seven on Saturday. Kevin and I will break it all down for you tomorrow. Look forward to it right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.